This is the Ag Market Network's monthly cotton conference call, brought to you by Cotton Incorporated and by Certified Fibermax. You can find more online at agmarketnetwork.net.
We want to welcome everyone today to the March edition of the Ag Market Network. We've had a little bit of technical problems here. Thanks for staying with us. This is a very special program today. We have a new member of our cotton panel we'll introduce in a few minutes. Also, we have a special guest speaker that I'll be introducing. Also, we want to remind everyone, we always have a little disclaimer here. We just want to remind everyone the opinion of our speakers is not necessarily the opinion of our sponsors, so we want everyone to keep that in mind. And speaking of our sponsors, we want to thank them and recognize them. Cotton Incorporated has been a longtime sponsor of our program. Bayer Crop Science also, and Farm Press. Our cotton panel is joining us today, but OA Cleveland should be with us soon. Dr. John Robinson, Jill Nieper. We're also adding a new member of our cotton panel today who's with us. Kip Butts is joining us today. He is a senior commodity analyst with Informa Economics, and we appreciate him being with us, and we'll ask for a word from him after our guest speaker. And let's go ahead and talk about our guest speaker. He's been with us before. Ed Jernigan is CEO of Jernigan Global. He is a very well-known and very well-respected cotton market expert. He has joined us on quite a few occasions, always does an excellent job. Ed, we thank you for being with us and joining us and giving us your thoughts on the cotton market.
All right. Are you ready? Are we ready to go forward?
We are ready. Yeah. You go ahead and start.
All right. Well, good morning, and thank you, Pat, for inviting me to speak. A little bit of background before what I'm going to speak about is, my group, we work with growers in Australia and Brazil to improve their quality, to get paid for it, alter the supply chain, increase their income, and also work with spinners on their procurement. So what I'm going to talk about probably a little bit different from what most of the discussion usually centers on. So I'm going to attempt to give you maybe a different view of the cotton price structure and its outlook. And so to start with this morning, I guess the way I like to structure it would be that I look at cotton as just not a generic commodity anymore. For the past 50 years, cotton has been viewed as an industrial commodity, and the world supply-demand balance has ruled the price movement. The USDA supply-demand estimates have been the source of great drama as the market experienced extreme price movement in their wake each time. Here in the U.S., cotton was the first commodity to be covered by the first of many farm support bills starting in 1933. This support scheme came out of the Great Depression, endured 81 years, maintaining U.S. cotton acreage and making the U.S. the largest cotton exporter in the world. In China, cotton has been a strategic control commodity since the creation of the People's Republic of China in 1949. This morning, I'm going to concentrate on how I think the world's a different place in 2015. First, we'll begin with cotton has been, has always been treated as an industrial commodity. Its supply chain is one of the most complex and segmented supply chains in the world. The complex nature of the supply chain, its segmentation, the role of government subsidies and programs, and the host of economic issues at play has limited the communication between the producer and the brand or retailer, and certainly the consumer. Under this supply chain, cotton from one country would move to another country to be processed into yarn, another for weaving or knitting into fabric, and yet another to be cut and sewn into the final product. This remains the dominant process today, but things are changing. Today's middle and upper class consumer is demanding new information. In food, they're demanding better quality, safer, traceable food. In apparel, he's beginning to want to know how the cotton in his garment was grown, where it was grown, and its environmental impact. He also wants to know whether child or slave labor was used in this harvest. Transparency in the working conditions of the workers involved in the manufacturing process has given birth to something called sustainable sourcing and fashion. In the traditional cotton, complex supply chain in cotton, each segment is pitted against the other to create a price savings. Huge transportation costs are involved, and the brand or retailer has little influence on cotton used in his product, which can have a major impact on the end product's quality and durability. To address this issue, a small movement is underway to develop fully integrated operations, with China in the lead in this following years of record fixed asset investment. To increase its ability to compete, it has also been modernizing its textile equipment, as have other regions. These movements and the increased awareness by some brands and retailers of the importance of cotton quality, the consumption of cotton from our standpoint can now be measured between machine and hand-picked cotton. The machine-picked cotton, for the most part, means U.S., Australia, and Brazil with a small volume from Spain and Greece. Spinners that have installed the modern spinning equipment and compact spinning now require machine-picked, low-contamination cotton. This development has accelerated over just the past 12 months. It had ramifications across the cotton market. The surge in U.S. spinner prices gave way to a move to substitute the longest staple U.S. and Australian cotton in place of Pima and the 60 and above count yarns. Such a development would have been unheard of just a year ago. In China, since the second half of 2014, spinners of the 60 and above count yarns have used a mix of 30 to 40% Australian and U.S. strychnine and long staple cotton in place of Pima and domestic ELS cotton. In the words of one Chinese spinner, quality now king. The current spreads between the various cottons tell the story, and they provide the growers with a true picture of economics and quality, which are much more than any USDA loan differentials. If you look at them today, here's how it stacks up. An Australian 2015 crop, which is just now being harvested, strychnine inch and 3/16 cotton is selling. This is on all CFR landed Asia basis, 3,000 on May or 30 cents on May. An Australian strychnine inch and 5/32 is selling 2,900 to 29 cents on May. A California Arizona green card 21/338 is 22 cents or 2,200 on May. And the more broader descriptions like the Memphis Eastern Texas gross, a green card 21/338 is selling 1950 on May. A 21/337 is selling 1850 on May. A green card 21/335 is 1225 on May. And our base grade, green card 41/434 is about 900 to 975 on May. This compares to an Indian tank of 6 1/8 at 450 to 500 on May. So cotton is just not cotton anymore. And the supply-demand balance of the machine-picked cottons is tight. In 2013-14, the U.S. carryover dropped to 2.45 million bales, and the bulk of that carryover is low-grade. The quality of the 2014 Brazilian crop was one of the poorest on record. This was joined by untimely rains during the Australian harvest. These events and increased consumption of machine-picked high-grade, longer-staple cotton has created a very tight situation. The U.S., Australian, Brazilian group of countries produced 24.91 million bales in 2013-14 with an exportable surplus of 16.51 million bales. For 2014-15, this block is expected to still produce 25.28 million bales as production dropped in Australia and Brazil. The exportable surplus will increase to 18.28 million bales with all of it in U.S. description. The outlook for 2015-16 for this block is very tight. At current price levels, production could collapse to 18.7 million bales with an exportable surplus of only 11.5 million bales. The reasons are simple. Cotton is no longer profitable in the U.S. and Brazil, and without a dramatic increase in irrigation supplies, Australian production will collapse to only 1.2 million bales, which has already been sold. Today, the Australian FOB gin yard basis is at record levels, 2,075 points to 2,100 points on May of 2015. 2016 crops 1,800 on May. And even the 17 crop is 1,100 on May. This brings us to the importance of the other points we mentioned. On the 2015 U.S. Farm Bill, the U.S. faces a different set of economics. Cotton is an uncovered commodity for the first time since 1933. The price depends much on the marketplace, or growers will turn to other crops. Financing could even be an issue with the market in the 63 to 65 cent area. Without any real safety net and a loan far below the cost of production, who would want to finance a crop that produces a loss? Farm program benefits will have to be replaced with a different value proposition. The crop will not likely be grown in many areas. Thus, the December ice futures in the 63 to 65 area, we expect U.S. acreage to fall below 9 million acres and production to fall 13.5 million bales or less. The future strip for December 2016 could imply production could drop another 50% or more if the prices stay at these levels. Same is true in Brazil. A lot of movements going on in the currency markets today, and the U.S. dollar is surging. But the real has collapsed against the dollar, reaching 3.17 on Tuesday. And this reflects over a 50% loss since March of 2011. Been a lot of talk about this meaning that commodity exporters will benefit. To some extent, they will. With inputs secured in November 2014 period, and the latest appreciation will aid returns. But production costs, which were locked in at a November exchange rate of 2.4, will mean the growers still face a break even in their 79 cents a pound. So no profit at these levels. For the 2016 crop, inputs will be secured in September, November, and if a three or more lower or weaker exchange rate prevails, a very expensive input cost will mean the growers will be forced to turn from cotton in 2016 and switch to a lower input cost that's much easier to finance. Against these facts, a December 16 futures of below 63 cents would suggest a domestic Brazilian crop no more than 4 million bales and an export surplus of 500,000. Now, people are going to think, you know, that's a big dramatic drop. I'm telling you, Brazil's in a crisis and they cannot get financed with it in these kind of conditions. Last year, growers had a minimum price in real that equaled about 71 to 72 cents, and that was used through what's something called the PEPRO program and is widely active to support. But the exchange rate, while the minimum price has stayed the same in real terms, with the current exchange rate, it's been reduced into the upper 50s, far below the cost of production. Thus, it offers really no production at all. The final point is China. It is a word that has dominated the global cotton market for my lifetime. Today, the USDA estimates at the end of 2014-15, it will hold nearly 65 million bales of 59% of all cotton stocks. What China will do with these stocks is what has the futures curve depressed and is continuing to keep the world market speculating. For 2015, China has said it will limit cotton imports to the WTO mandated level of 4.1 million bales. But no government action, including the mandate of the all-powerful China, can make a commercial market segment pay 25 cents a pound more for domestic cotton and use an inferior product. We'll come back to that in a minute. Cotton has been a controlled commodity since the People's Republic was formed. I first went there and did a joint venture in 1999, and at that time it was against the law to know truly what the supply was or what the consumption was. The state supplies, production, and consumption had been a state secret for much of this time. This all ended in September 2014. China, under the new administration, came to the decision it was simply uneconomical to grow cotton on the small plots of eastern China, and it ended the cotton procurement at prices far above the market after three seasons in which the reserve purchased most of the crop, introduced a target price scheme that was focused in Xinjiang. The 2014 results were mixed, and growers in Xinjiang will likely reduce acres by 10% or more in the coming season, and eastern China acres will fall 50% or more or simply just phased out. We're not sure what China will do with the reserve stocks. What we do know is the quality of reserve stocks is declining with each passing day. These stocks, as a rule, cannot be used in above, you know, 40 and above count yarns, and even then it has to be mixed with either domestic crop, new crop, or with imports. For the moment, the move to limit China's imports is accelerating cotton yarn imports, which reached a new record in January. January yarn imports reached 197,963 tons after adjusted for re-imports. The volume of August 14 to January 15, cotton yarn imports exceeded the volume of cotton fiber import for the first time on record. The largest supplier was India, which if you take what the Indian imports for the month of January and annualize them, it's nearly 5 million bales. If you combine that with the amount of Indian cotton imported on an annualized basis, that's about 21.5% of the crop. So far, the Chinese cotton yarn imports are serving to support world price via cotton use in India, Pakistan, Vietnam, Indonesia, and others. But China's entered a catch-22. Its cotton consumption will not rise until mills have excess to cotton at the same prices as non-Chinese spinners. On the other hand, if it let domestic prices fall to world levels, then the cost of subsidy in Xinjiang will simply be unbearable. However, the issues with the current two-tier system are causing new problems daily. There's no easy solution to the problem until world prices rise above Chinese domestic prices. At the moment, the government becomes involved in the commodity price management and procurement and storage scheme. It always ends in a big bang. That even happened here in the U.S. with the Great Inventory Adjustment Payment in the 1985 Farm Bill. So to wrap all this up, we come back to simple economics. In the U.S. and Brazil, the two largest machine pig growers and exporters of cotton, cotton has become a very expensive input crop, but now has the same basic level supporting both countries. One is a CCC loan, the other is a PEPRO auction. The support level of either only assures a loss. This means to us, anyway, that the market price, basis, and quality premium will have to provide the income. Today, with ICE futures strip at 65 cents through the 2017 crop year, cotton cannot be grown in the volume at anywhere near the required machine pick consumption levels. It's important to remember that the base grade for ICE is out of touch and needs to be revised upwards. So at 41.434 is the open-end cotton, and that's not where the value is, nor where the U.S. or Brazil has its advantage. So the futures at times can always reflect the value of that and not the value of the other cottons, and they're doing a little bit of that today. But it's up to the market to provide the incentive. It'll have to do it now or do it later. So I just maybe conclude my remarks. Thank you, and it gives, hopefully gives you a little bit different view of the world market.
Okay. Ed, we've got quite a few questions that have come in, and I'd like to ask you a couple of these, and then we'll open it up to everybody on our panel. You know, here's a question we've got. Does the ICE exchange need a new cotton contract that better reflects the type of cotton grown in the U.S.? If yes, then why do we not have one?
Well, now, you know, each of the panel is going to have their own view. My view has always been that it's been out of touch for a long time. You've got the and mostly it's been politics that hadn't vision that hadn't changed. But I think basically, you know, ICE is an all electronic exchange. It's driven by volume. It's not really driven by always providing the marketplace with the contracts it needs. So it's not going to readily move to change the value of the change the base grade of the contract until somebody demands it. But I think it definitely needs a different base grade. And like this season, I don't know if I got the exact number, but only like 3 million bales of the U.S. crop had a staple length of inch and 16th and shorter. So my answer, of course, is yes.
Okay. Another question, and, you know, anyone else can join in on this discussion. There's been some talk about old crop cotton funds having too long a position in that, needing to liquidate. That seems understandable, but why has December dropped as much as it's dropped in recent days?
Well, I think it's linked to two things. One is that the December volume, if you went back and looked at the daily volume, out of, let's say, 3,000 contracts out of trade, 2,000 of them would be from spreads. So much of the liquidity and price discovery in the December 2015 contract is coming from spreads. I think that's number one. Number two is that, you know, mills are buying hand to mouth. They've been very little forward cover. So you don't, when they come in and do the spreads and so forth, there has been a large amount of people of opinion that July should go over December. So you've had that spreading going on, and then you've got mills having limited, and most of the purchases from the mills for the December and forward period have been on call. So you got little support coming from anything, you know, any real true price discovery. That's my opinion anyway.
Okay. Let me direct this to Gerald. This question comes in. There's been talk of, in the future, seeing changes to the current farm bill with regard to cotton. Any thoughts on that?
Pat, do you have any specific points in terms of changes of the current farm bill? I'm not sure.
No, that's just a question as it came in.
Well, I think the big one that affects cotton growers especially is the payment limitations with respect to the loan deficiency payment, or the LDP, or the POP payment, whatever you want to call it. You know, you've got a marketing loan in place, and in order for a marketing loan to be a marketing loan, you know, you shouldn't restrict growers in terms of how much money they can collect, you know, back from the government for redeeming cotton below the loan price. You know, we had marketing certificates at one time that didn't impact us, because what could possibly happen is, you know, that cotton ends up getting forfeited to the government, and so you end up with somebody buying the cotton from the government at the world market price, and they're not subject to any payment limitations at all. So it seems a little ironic that you would, disingenuous, that you would allow forfeitures and allow somebody who's not a farmer to have essentially no payment limitations, withdrawing cotton from the loan, but yet you're going to subject farmers to payment limitations. I think that's the big one that's sitting on the head of cotton growers right now.
Okay. Here's a question, and this comes from Lubbock to you, Ed. It seems that the spinning sector is moving to higher grades overall, and you mentioned this. Will we eventually see no or very little use of low grades? What does that do to the market?
Well, I don't think, you know, the the spinning industry is changing so forth, but I mean, low grades always have a certain function in the open end market and yards and so forth. I just think that, I mean, anyway, this is my viewpoint, and everybody on the panel would have a different one, but, you know, from what I've seen, I certainly wouldn't want to be in a position where my number one competitor for cotton is the Indians or the Pakistanis or some of those produced cottons, because that is where the true open end, you know, situation goes. Now, the U.S. cotton industry is still very competitive in open end. You know, the mill textile sector is still very competitive in open end. A lot of it has to do with our low energy cost and things like that. But from a cotton growing standpoint, I don't want to be, you know, if I'm in that business, I don't want to be producing any low grades or any short sales of cotton, because it's going to go into, I don't want to be competing in the open end market. If I'm growing it, I want to be growing the top end quality cotton that I can be in the same value proposition as close as I possibly can to Australia. So that's how I see the value.
Okay. Here's a question. Well, I just would submit this. And Kip Butts, who's joining us now as a part of our panel, we know that energy prices affect everything, especially cotton. In addition to being a cotton analyst, you are also an energy analyst. And give us your thoughts on energy prices and what we can look forward to over the next year there.
Well, you know, given the international situation for well, particularly the OPEC producers, they have chosen to essentially go to war with the shale producers in the United States. And they're winning, quite honestly. Their cost of production is so low relative to the rest of the world. When I say they, I'm talking about Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran. Their prices are so incredibly low that they can keep they can stand these low prices for an extended period. Their goal is to cut off investment both short and to either defer or stop longer term, when I say longer term, 18 months to 2 years out, investment in crude oil so they can maintain their share of the world market. Expect that to be a very effective and long-term program. So I would expect to see prices between about $45 and $60 on WTI for the next probably 18 months or longer, potentially a lot longer than that. The last time that Saudi Arabia decided to get market share was in the 1980s, and it was almost 15 years before we got prices back to the level before they chose to take their action. Now, there was an exception to that. We had the Iraq War. It did spike and come right back off, but that was a very short period. So we can look forward to relatively low energy prices, at least for crude oil, and the products will be a little bit more volatile, but the crude oil prices should remain at the levels I talked about probably for the next 18 to 24 months or so.
Okay. Back to you, Ed. One other thing. With prices for December at these levels, and I look at the screen here and see the thing is at 62.70 in that area. What are the projected cutbacks on acreage for major cotton producing countries, China, India, and the U.S.?
Well, I've discussed the U.S. and Brazil and Australia. Outside of that, I think, you know, my own opinion has been that, you know, that in China, it's simply uneconomical to grow cotton in the current scheme. Now, right now, the acreage is, you know, nobody quits anything instantly, and it's slow to go away, but China's production is going to be, and Eastern China will, within the next 1 or 2 years, disappear, and leave it all in Xinjiang. Xinjiang is very much like the San Joaquin Valley where Joel's from. I mean, it's running off irrigation. It produces the largest amount of tomatoes, probably a larger producer. I don't know what the numbers are than the U.S. has. It has a lot of competition, but it also has a lot of soils that are not, from way out, and not suitable for food production crops, and so cotton is continuing to be attractive. It's also very important politically because of the PCC and the settlement of Xinjiang and so forth. So cotton production will continue there. I think it will continue to scale back. This year was about 4.3 million tons produced in Xinjiang. I think that will go down about 10% next year and slowly erode down. But China will, you know, stabilize probably with a cotton production base somewhere in that range, you know, in the 3.5 to 3.7 million metric ton range. But it's all about where the price structure is, because I think that, you know, the Chinese cotton program, the way it's written today, it is, you know, anytime the government gets involved in anything, you can go back to the Thai rice support of the last 2 years where they messed up the rice market. I mean, it is not going to end well, and it's, you know, whatever, but it's not sustainable in its current format to continue like it is. So I see cotton production there going down and staying down and won't be back. As far as other places around the world, I think acreage in Pakistan will be maintained. The growers have had a record per crop this year. India will cut back probably 10 or 20%. At least 10%. So you're going to have some cutbacks. But the biggest event going on probably right now, I think, is in China, that China's role in cotton production is going to change dramatically. And it may take several years for this to sort out. But China cannot produce cotton at an economical price unless the price is, $1.40, $1.50 a pound. And we're far away from that today.
Well, Ed, what level for December cotton stabilizes acreage? December cotton under 63, I think in the past you talked about this market maybe getting up towards 70, 71, 72. Are you still looking for the possibility of that?
Again, I think the market problem is just hovered around this, what China's going to do and not do and that sort of thing. Think the market needs to do, from an economic standpoint, to maintain acres on one side of the table, but the other side of the table is, where are the mills today willing to buy cotton? It's proven right now that the U.S. can sell volumes of cotton, of our higher grade cotton anyway. I think the battle for the front of the market, yes, is under pressure right now because of the fund long position got too long. Second part of it is, we're in a phase where we've got to, for the market to get as tight as it could, we got to export our middle grades. And that's not where the market's hot at the moment. So the next wave of exports, to export the middle grades, is a tougher endeavor than it is. And we're at a large premium to the other grocers, so those price I outlined for you. So we're in the process of finding out where the world will take up the medium grades. But if you look at December, I think that from a spinner standpoint, once they begin to focus that far out, this 61, 62, there was a lot. U.S. sold a tremendous volume of cotton once we broke the 60-cent level. So we're already near that point. So I think there's a big block of demand for yarn and so forth. The prices equate to the December futures in the 60 to 61, 62. So I think there's a lot of support there. Now, as far as where the market's got to get up, your audience is going to know that much better than me. I'm just looking at simple economics here. Now, from the Brazilian standpoint, in a scenario where, you've got your input costs coming in dollars and you got to break even, around 79 cents, and you've got a marketing structure where we really don't reward them for quality. And in that environment, and you got cotton input costs that running close to $2,000 this past season per hectare, and you've got corn input costs running about six, or soybeans at $6.70 a hectare and corn about the same, you're just not going to get financed. It's not even a matter of what you want to do, don't want to do, whatever. It's not happening. So that acreage is not coming back, will not be back unless the value proposition to get the growers back to at least a level to make, that he can cover his costs and so forth. So it's much more than what the market is today, way back in the 70s. In the U.S., your grower audience knows what their true cost is and what little benefit you get from the farm program now. But I would imagine the cotton is, from a growing standpoint, is not a very excitable crop unless I can take on a net FOB to gen basis, 71 or 72 cents. So, or maybe even more than that, it's not exciting at that level. But will I grow it at that level? Maybe. But, until then, it's whether it's 65, 64, 67, it's exercise and discussion, but it doesn't really mean anything in economics. So I think December futures from 15 all the way through the rest of the board are out of touch with reality as far as cotton economics, and they're there because of spreads and the electronic trading, and also because of fear that China's going to do something, to take its 60% of world stocks and, dump them, which is a whole different debate.
Okay. I want to go to John Robinson. John, I'm going to ask you the question we asked OA last month, and that is, if we have significant cotton acreage cutbacks and disruptive weather conditions during the growing season somewhere in the world in a major cotton-producing area, how high can we go in December cotton?
I've been projecting 70-ish. I would say a quick spike to 70 or 71 or 72 is possible, but short of that scenario of what you were saying, something bad developing and the market's reacting to it, overreacting to it, I expect us to honestly just trade in a 60-70 range.
Okay.
Let me just
open it up to the panel. Anybody like to make a comment about the market? Anything?
Yeah, I'd like to. This is Kip. Let me. We've talked an awful lot about the supply side of this market, and I've been very interested in, and I agree with just about everything that Ed's had said about this market. There's been an interesting transition that he articulated very well, that the high grades now are really dominating the high-end spinning market. There's always a market, as he said earlier, for the mid and lower grades, and the differences between the extreme high grades and the low grades are where we find that market, which is why I think that Ed was saying, well, I'm not exactly sure. Those differences, that's very difficult to calculate, and the market has to tell us that. We typically find that out a little later. The other thing we didn't talk about was the demand side of this market. Excuse me. And the demand side is relatively weak for cotton because of competing alternative fibers. Polyester prices in India and China and in the Asian region are just ridiculously cheap compared to cotton, despite low energy prices. So we're in a situation where alternative fibers are also impacting cotton usage, regardless of the quality. Also in the world markets right now, general economic growth is certainly not as good as we'd like for it to be. So we're in a spot where we've got stagnating global economic growth, a consumer that is not as fiber discriminating as it used to be, and a situation where alternative fibers are having an impact. So we have to look at the overall consumptive market for fibers, apparel, and usage. And right now, that's not growing as quickly as we'd like. That also hurts. Comes into play for the December price. So I wanted to bring that up to say that we're in a relatively weak market, and that's going to impact the price structure as well.
Kip, this is John. Does your oil forecast what you said about $40 to $60 per barrel prices for the next, I forget now, 18 months or so, would you project the same structure of polyester man-made fiber being competitive over that same period? I mean, is the oil price thing contributing to an ongoing cheapness in man-made fiber? Or is that just all overcapacity in China and India?
That's primarily it, overcapacity. You just have too much of the feedstock, and it plays into the alternative usages for that feedstock is consumer packaging, and kind of a strong consumer helps pick up that feedstock price. Because the global economy is not growing, then that by itself just sort of keeps that polyester price at a lower level than it would be if the economy were growing faster. So, yes, in answer to your question, you've got the overcapacity in China and India and a slow global economic growth. So, yeah, you're going to keep the polyester prices relatively weak, particularly compared to cotton.
Any other comments?
Kip, this is OA. Just back to the polyester situation again. We know that that China, for time after time, that they have just continued to build poly plants, polyester manufacturing plants, even though they were basically already saturated.
Yes.
Do we see any new manufacturing coming online over there? In other words, are they still pumping investment into that? I don't know. I'm curious.
I don't have any recent information on it. I get the indication that that's sort of cooled. They're at the point now, this is enough. But as far as the actual data, I'm not on top of that. I can't answer the question. I just don't know if there's new investment or not.
Great. Well, they are so over, have built such overcapacity. It's difficult to fight that battle in some ways.
Yeah, it's difficult for me to believe that they're still in that mode, given the kind of problems they've had with overcapacity. So, although I don't have any direct evidence to say they've stopped, I believe that would be the case.
Thank you for joining us.
No, thanks for enjoying being here. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we usually wrap up our meeting by going around the panel and asking for their ideas on price. OA, we'll start with you. Give us your thoughts on where cotton prices should be going.
Well, obviously, Pat, they should be going about 20 to 30 cents higher, but they're not going to do that. The market itself is doing an excellent job in rationing plantings, and I believe it will continue to do that through the spring and through the entire planting season. And it's absolutely necessary for that to occur, given the situation that we have. But nevertheless, Eddie's comments regarding the quality situation and where the quality cotton production has to come from, that is developed. There is a severe tightness developing there, and obviously to me it's becoming a fact that that's not going to really show up in the marketplace until the 2016 crop becomes an issue. So for the deck 15, I guess we better hang our head just a little bit low and accept these mid-60s deck at 65 cents. And with I still think we have a considerable shot at 70 cents. And particularly as if the question was mentioned, I think you did, if we were to have a particular disaster in one of the major producing countries, I think December would have 70 cents written all over it.
Okay, John, you've talked a little bit. Just summarize your ideas on prices.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, I'm expecting futures to trade in the 60-cent range and spend most of their time in the mid-60-cent range. And if they spike up, I would imagine it would be briefly, and I would imagine it would be after June on some weather production issue and the funds get revved up, and that would push it up, and I don't think it would stay there very long.
Okay, Gerald.
Well, I guess I'm hope springs eternal, and I'm still thinking that we'll get into the low 70s at some point. Planting intentions are coming out, and with these lower prices, of course, I guess planting intentions, they would have already collected them from growers out in the countryside. But if, National Cotton Council was already down almost 15%, and if USDA comes out with a survey that's down, let's say, closer to 9 million acres rather than 9.4 million acres, and you start selling out of this old crop, you could see, and you have a problem, this summer someplace here, especially in the United States. I mean, it wouldn't be, I don't think, problematical at all to get up into the low 70s. One thing we didn't talk about was the value of the U.S. dollar, and that's not helping things at all right now either. It's certainly making cotton more expensive, at least from a U.S. origin standpoint. I noticed that technicians are keep talking like the dollar's getting near a high, but it doesn't seem like the economies are improving any place outside the United States. So I suspect that the high dollar is going to remain with us for a while, except for a technical correction. And then you got the speculators. I mean, they got too aggressive selling this market down. They got too aggressive in pushing this market higher. You just don't know where they're going to be. They always seem to push things to an extreme. So with any kind of a weather event, and if we come in the planting's a lot lower, I do think we could certainly get up into the lower 70s by early summertime.
Okay, Kip, what are your thoughts?
Well, I guess I'm more pessimistic than most of the folks on the board. I do think, given what John had said earlier and what Gerald as well, 60 kind of price range, possibility for a spike up into 70s. I think that would be a gift for us. Given the slow world economies, the extremely strong dollar, the prospects of the dollar really not, other than, like Gerald said, we may get some technical corrections, but the rest of the world, well, outside the U.S., is following this quantitative easing program, which is pressing their currencies down. That's going to pressure December in as much as our exports are not going to hold up simply because, to Gerald's point, they're too expensive in relative terms. So I think there's the possibility of December seeing something in the high 50s. I hope it doesn't stay there long, but my range, I guess, is just a little bit wider than these fellows on the rest of the board, simply because I think we have the possibility of a global economy just not growing as fast as we think, and the strong dollar just depressing prices in general for dollar-denominated currencies, or commodities, rather.
Okay. Ed, what are your thoughts on prices for December?
Well, I mean, you know, everyone has made some very valid points there, and there's no use regurgitating all those. I think generally that, you know, putting the emotion aside for a moment, the December could see the upper 50s for a period of time, but I think the strong yarn demand at that price when you convert it to a CFR Asia basis. So unless something dramatically happens in China, I think the arbitrage of exporting yarn into China will accelerate as prices those level, and we've already seen evidence that China is importing more higher count yarns to get around the government limitation on cotton imports. So for the moment, I see support there. On the upside, listen, I don't have any. The dollar is very much correct. The dollar is playing a role in everything and every commodity, and but we, you know, the contrarian to me also says that, you know, when the world looks like nothing's more, you know, that it can't ever end, that's also when you got to think about the other side. And the dollar has reached some amazing extreme points, being so heavily involved in Brazil and Australia. I'm looking at, you know, some dramatic moves in both those currencies and making those countries extremely cheap against the U.S. So put it all together, where we could go on the upside, just remember, everybody, you know, it all depends a little bit to do with what China and what their imports and so forth. Given the level of Chinese domestic prices, if something happens and mills can get a hold of processing quota or any of that, you know, we were only in the 90s last year. So it's not like this 90s was some level way seen, you know, that's so strange to us. It always really depends on the arbitrage and what can go into China and what can't go into China. Today, there's like nothing going into China. They're not going to do anything, and the world's in this really depressed state. I don't know how far we can go on the upside. I'm not smart enough to know that. I just know that where we've been is always where we can go, and it all depends on what the China arbitrage and where, you know, prices can be landed and so forth, because their prices are still near a dollar. And, you know, for the moment, they've cut off imports, and they're not going to probably light them back in. But, you know, Chinese is no transparency, and they also issue sometimes processing quotas indiscreetly. I'm telling anybody they've done it until it always shows up in the market. So the mills have a lot of pressure there to get themselves a hold of cotton, so a higher quality cotton. So in that environment, I think the low 50, you know, the upper 50s, 58 to 50 to 60 cents would be near the low in December, and I don't know where the upside is. It just depends on a lot of what happened to Chinese demand.
Okay. Well, let's wrap up our meeting for today. Ed, thanks for joining us, for giving us your time. Very much appreciated. You did an excellent job. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. I want to also thank our cotton panel for being part of our program here today. I want to mention again our sponsors, Cotton Incorporated, also Bayer Crop Science, and also Farm Press Publications. We thank you for joining us, our listeners. And we hope you'll join us again next time for the Ag Market Network. Thank you.